Everyone, those Anglophones among us, the time is 14:09, and we have the joy of having both John Curran, chair of the ASO, and also Louis Lee, chair of the ASO Address Council, otherwise as ASO-AC. And, we are going to speak to both of them and basically have a follow-up on our discussions that we had last time. Do you have a presentation, or is it just an open dialogue? Discussion. So open discussion. So the discussion, as we had it in the previous meeting in Costa Rica, was one where we thought, well, how can we coordinate or work better together between the ALAC at-large community and the ASO and its own community. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, involves all the network information centers around the world as well as the regional at-large organizations. Right. So the floor is open. Who would like to send the first ball into the court?
So one of the items that came up was sharing of we have informational contact information that we use. We send to everyone who's participating currently in the regional registry development process. I know that our coordinators for each of the RIR for communications now have contact information for the ALAC coordinators. You folks should now be receiving, if you're a coordinator for a ALAC region, I guess, you should now be receiving informational notices from that RIR about policy events and similar. So that's the only action item I had to follow up on. I just want to say I believe it's done. And if it's not done, find me and I'll find out why I think it's done. Okay?
Thank you very much, John. Do you have details of the addresses to which this is sent? Is this sent to at-large staff or...?
We actually asked for the actual coordinators for each of the regions, and so that's what we're sending them to.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I wonder then if we could put into the next lot of regional.
Who are you?
You don't have any idea, and I'm not going to say. My name's Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. It might be good for us to follow up with just a little agenda item in each of the RALO meetings so that we close the loop on our end. So that might be, you know, Sylvia, sort of make sure it gets into that agenda and then it gets into that record so the ALSs know that that's happened as well. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, so that's one action item taken care of. Now, the next step, of course, is, obviously the... There are calendars of events that take place both on the in the RALOs and also in the regional internet registries, and that I think was probably the next step in trying to see how the RALOs can engage more with the RIRs. And I understand there's also events that are taking place.
Sure.
So let's start talking.
So. One question we have is we've actually changed as part of the evolution of the format of the ICANN meeting, where we no longer have Fridays, apparently, we reminded those in ICANN who control such things, I don't know, that a lot of our policy discussions don't take place here. In fact, our policy discussions take place in regional meetings that take place all around the globe. And that removing the only forum where we get to remind people about that wasn't a great service to us. So either because they had sympathy on us or because they were sick of me asking about it, we got a session yesterday, an ASO update session, in the main track. And we used that, and it was 15 minutes?
Yes.
15 minutes. We used that to point out where our regional meetings are coming up and what policies are under discussion as a very quick update. And it's not a not a long process. It's just a pointer for you to get engaged. I hadn't thought about it, but if you'd like, we could actually go through that presentation here as well, because some of you may not have been in the main session. Yes? Yes?
Yes. Okay. John, Olivier here. Actually, we have an extremely full schedule, which got us into this room all of Sunday, all of Monday, all of Tuesday, actually. We haven't moved. And I think the majority of us were not able, unfortunately, to attend. So it would be really appreciated if we could have an update here. Do you have slides that you wish to pass on over to Matt for him to project, also for our remote participants, by any chance?
The most current deck is on the ICANN website on the schedule, if he wants to go and grab that.
Then our wizard, Matt, is going to deal with this.
So, Matt, it was yesterday afternoon. The slide deck was ASO Activities and Policy Update.
I believe it's there.
Node 31649, if you happen to like numbers.
And you know you are dealing with the ASO when they start speaking numbers.
Hey, it's shorter.
Yeah. I'll take the name.
So it's the ASO supporting organ. Address policy update from yesterday.
And if your presentation doesn't deal with IPv6, perhaps you could also append a little update on this as well.
We have that in there.
Oh, fantastic. Super.
And if you can redistribute it to the remote participants.
Or does that automatically get out there? Maybe he does that.
Okay. That's all good.
They see the same thing we see?
Wow.
Technology.
We might not have to come to these meetings anymore. No way.
Well, we will to get our license to issue slides.
Excellent. Okay. So this is the presentation we gave yesterday afternoon. Go ahead and move on to the next slide, please. For the record, I'm Louis Lee, the one listed on the presentation. I'm the chair of the ASO Address Council. We went over the ASO activities that are happening this week, with an update on the ASO NRO activities, namely the policy update, board selection, and the IGF workshops. Then after that, we talked about the ASO review report and explained how to participate in the addressing policy, and just touched on the survey for the global IPv6 deployment. John.
Before you continue, Louis, I'm John Curran. I'm the chair of the ASO, Address Supporting Organization. The Address Supporting Organization is an organization specified in ICANN's bylaws to provide coordination and advice to the board on addressing matters. The Address Supporting Organization is a role that's served by an organization called the NRO. The five regional registries working together are the number resource organization. I'm the chair of the NRO, and because the NRO acts as the ASO, I'm the chair of the ASO. The ASO has a member-elected policy body that does policy coordination called the Advisory Council, or the ASOAC. Louis is the chair of the ASOAC, and we'll continue with the report. Thank you.
I suppose my title slide could have been that. Okay, moving on. The ASO activities this week. We had listed the GAC update on the RPKI deployment, the ASO workshop on Wednesday afternoon, and the IPv6 session coming up on this Thursday morning. I also told the audience about this meeting right here about how we are engaging with ALAC.
And people can participate in those.
Oh, yes, of course. These are the open meetings, and people should be coming to these. global policy proposal for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanisms by IANA. This is the latest global policy resource that was passed, adopted by ICANN board just a little over a month ago. It's guiding for resources being returned by the RIRs, and most likely the RIPE NCC and ARIN have both returned resources to the IANA for redistribution around the world equally. Next, please.
Louis, when you say resources, it's numbers, I guess, IPv4 addresses.
Yes, yes. In this case, particularly, it is IP addresses, IPv4 addresses that were returned and will be redistributed. Resources then, when we talk about resources, it includes IPv4 addresses, IPv6 addresses, and AS numbers, autonomous system numbers, which are used between networks to identify themselves to each other. Okay. The ICANN board selection. Most likely, we have reappointed Ray Polzak to seat 9. The correction for this slide is that his term ends actually in 2015, not 2014. The language in the bylaws made it a little bit difficult to understand when his term actually expires. It expires 6 months after the after the general meeting in 2014. So that puts it in 15. The C10 is currently held by Kuei Wu, and his term expires next year. So we'll be starting the selection process soon. Then beyond the... Oh, I think we had skipped a slide before the board selection. There we are. RIR policy update. After the global policy, we also have regional policies. They affect the region that are discussing and passing these policies. There are also inter-RIR transfer policies in work and in place in some regions. APNIC adopted one last year, and ARIN adopted one this year to be implemented soon. And under discussion over at RIPE, and currently there are no proposals in the other two regions, the Latinic and Afrinic regions. So if you'd like to have a full update on these, please come to our Wednesday workshop. Skipping the board slide, thank you. There's a number of RIR outreach activities in the area of internet governance. Specifically, this slide talks about the Baku meeting in November. These are activities coordinated and funded by the NRO. In this meeting, the MAG participants are Paul Wilson and Paul Rendek. These two workshops listed are open to all, namely the Internet Governance and RPKI workshop, and the Moving to IPv6 workshop. Late last year, the ASO review report was completed, and it was published mid-March this year. The link to that report is posted on the slide right there. And there is a joint NRO and ASOAC response, which was published a little later during the comment response process. It is a response to the 26 recommendations in the report, along with a new recommendation posted as one of the comments. John?
So one of the recommendations in the ASO review that came out of the independent review that was conducted, I could paraphrase as saying, NRO, ASO, ASOAC, you guys are confusing with your terminology. Can you fix this for the rest of us? And we're busy looking at that. We thought we were pretty well organized and pretty clear with the NRO acts as the ASO, and the ASO has an advisory council. But other organizations have different terminology, and if we look at how we use that? Like, should we use the term NRO at all since ASO subsumes that? Is advisory council AC? AC as an acronym isn't really the same as saying council. Maybe ASO council would make it a lot clearer to other organizations that have council. So we're busy looking at this and the other 25 recommendations, which aren't as humorous, but we're going to come back on all of them and try to make things easier on everyone.
Everyone like easy? Great. So the next steps with this review report is that the Structural Review Committee will have a look at it and see where some of it may apply to them. Some of it actually talks about the ICANN board, so the ICANN board will also have a look at it, and we'll know how they intend to act soon, hopefully. Okay. We invited everybody to the RIR meetings and, of course, invite you all as well. The meetings themselves are open in that you don't have to be a member of the RIR, nor do you even have to reside in that region. I understand that the term member could be loaded, but residence is another way to say. But even if you're outside the region, reside outside the region, you may come and participate. Or if you don't want to come, you can participate remotely. Remote participation is free also. Free. And just need to register to get the link. There are fellowship programs around available. And I think I'll leave it at that for the moment. We're thinking of ideas of how to invite the ALAC and RALO members in a better way. And then beyond the meetings themselves, the policy mailing lists are also open. You do not also, again, have to be in the same region to be participating in the mailing list. If you have an interest in a policy or if you want to propose a policy, you can just do so. Next, please. Okay. The next few slides are the talk about the upcoming RIR meetings in chronological order. So the very next one coming up is APNIC 34. It will be in Cambodia, and it's in late August. Next. The one after that is in September, late September for RIPE 65. It will be held in Amsterdam. You might note that some of these meetings seem to run a lot longer than others. That's because, for instance, in the RIPE meeting, it's a combination of operator and policy meeting. So this way, there are good synergies where the operators, where these policies would affect, are actually there helping make policies. And then after that is the ARIN 30 meeting. It is in late October, the week after the Toronto ICANN meeting. Yes, I did say during the session yesterday, it's the ARIN XXX meeting. It is ARIN 30. Yes, for those remote, that's where the chuckles are coming from. And it is being held in Dallas, Texas. Not where you might expect something like this to be. LATNIC will have their meeting next in late October, running into November. It will be held in Montevideo, Uruguay. Next. And closer to the end of the year, in late November, is the AFRINIC 17 meeting to be held in the Republic of Sudan. May I first maybe ask if anybody has any questions about attending the meetings, either remotely or in person? Yes.
No, go ahead. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Cheryl. Louis, my question was a bit like, most of the LSs come without the technical knowledge and background, because at some point in time, John, you already know me, Fuad Bajwa, we're on the IGC. Sort of what happens then is when we get into dialogue with the experts, we get really pretty much battered up. But that's I think the gap we have to reduce, and at least for the closest ones, which is APNIC for AP Rallo, I think there's a need of sort of trying to build a bridge of technical knowledge, right, and get that orientation to participate in these processes. I tried to, I think Paul is leading APNIC, right? At one point in time, I had some dialogue with him, but I understood that my knowledge on that particular our area was really low, right? So then I came into ICANN. But that goes for many other ALS members, ALSs and members of AP Rallo. So maybe some kind of orientation bridge where we could, because ICANN does a policy briefing, why not have the RIRs do their briefings? Thank you.
So actually, as it turns out, yes, yes, and yes. All of the RIR meetings have a orientation where we cover the structure of the RIR, how the policy development process works, and then the summary of the policies that are up for discussion. This turns out, in some cases, to be very popular even by those people who are very experienced, because it's a good way to get a summary of the policies under discussion. So that's become very popular in the RIRs, and we actually have now moved to generally trying to make sure those are also remotely broadcast for people who want to participate. So we'll see more of that. I think most of the RIRs do it. We might have one RIR yet who's not doing the remote broadcasting of that, but I think it's essential. I think it's something we're seeing more and more of, and it's very important. I've found people who are very experienced who find it refreshing to get a quick summary of what's about to come up for discussion.
When I first came into ICANN through the fellowship program, it was a fellowship program that educated us how to participate in the ICANN process, and that's where we met Cheryl and we met all the other constituencies and advisory. So similarly, I think even if these are recorded and available as webinars, even if though people don't participate physically, maybe their interest before they apply for a fellowship, you can give a link that before you apply for the fellowship, have a look at this. This is like the bird of feather or whatever. Yeah.
Well, that's terrific. I just note, Sally, you wanted to say something? I've still got my mic in order, but go for it.
Oops. Thank you. Salieta Tamanikamara for the record. I'd just like to, I know I've done this already in San Jose, but to continually acknowledge the excellent work you're doing through the network operator groups, even through the various ALS structures. I know some of your members of certain ALS structures take, for example, in the Pacific, APNIC, in fact, hosts the mailing list of our ALS and that sort of thing, and very actively involved in building capacity. In terms of from the public interest, protecting public interest perspective, transitioning to IPv6 and moving a whole bunch of policies that need or things that need to be set in place on the ground, whether it's policy, whether it's advocacy with governments, whether it's raising the standards in terms of, especially in developing countries where we get a lot of vendor equipment dumped that may not necessarily be compatible during the transition, you know, whether it's dual stack or whatever. But so the point is, just riding on Fuad's, what Fuad raised, I would like to make a recommendation or suggestion, if I may. You know how you work closely with the NOG, whether it's Southeast Asia NOGs or MENOG or PACNOG, whatnot. Right. And it's currently dedicated towards working with the telcos and ISPs, the operators, and some government technical staff. I'd like to encourage you to increase the ambit to cater for perhaps those who are not technical, but looking to target strategically those who may be on the ground working, in terms of government, in terms of policy and that sort of thing, helping them to connect the dots, not only from a technical perspective. We all know that the transition needs to happen. We're way behind time. but just basically in terms of the level of reforms, you know, just getting the discussions on the ground in terms of the level of reforms that need to take place in terms of whether it's standardization. I know for RIPE NCC, they have on their website a list of, vendors and sort of, you know, standards and that sort of thing. But just to encourage capacity building, so from a public interest perspective, at large interests and those whom we purport to represent or whom we represent, the interests can be preserved and protected. With that, I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Salma.
If I may touch on some of the topics that are discussed in these RIR meetings, while several of them are very technical in nature, talking about bit boundaries, which way to move the allocation windows, so on, there are a whole series of policies that are governance-related. The amount of information you might publish in the WHOIS database, for instance, privacy concerns in that regard, recovery of address space, whether to do it, when to do it, how often do you go back to validate records, things of that nature, things that perhaps law enforcement would be interested in, things that the individual users might be interested in, especially on the privacy standpoint. We've accommodated, for instance, the Canadian government in making sure that we don't write rules that force the ISPs to violate their own laws. So you can start out just with a very basic background and still participate.
Thank you very much, Louis. Any other questions or...
Just to help you, Cheryl Langdonoff for the transcript record, I know that Sergio did want to speak, and if that's the case, you will probably, unless you speak Spanish, need to have your earphones ready. So just to prime and filibust while he gets ready. And I did want to take one moment while that's happening to say what I wanted to say. Cheryl Langdonoff for the transcript record, that is actually what I want to say at this point in the meeting. I just want to keep saying Cheryl Langdonoff for the transcript record. No, seriously now. I started remote participation, and I've just got to say it is so important, and it's a real tool for all of you and your ALS members to just feel comfortable about some of the topics. I'm delighted to hear that the briefing stuff is now coming out because I sort of went, oh, I know all about this now and I've moved on. I might come back and play now because those briefings sound really, really good. But they're things that we actually need to get out to our rank and file members. If we get 10,000 people, and we might, you got the bandwidth, I assume. There's no problem. We can't overload. That's good. And what that does is allow our edge communities to be more educated, but in a safe way. They're very easy to watch, they're very easy to listen, they're very easy to participate in, and it's a nice stepping stone. Then what might be able to happen is something that the ALS that Polly and I are members of, ISOC AU, of course, put on a workshop at an APNIC meeting losing the ability to even move my mouth, let alone use my brain. What it was a workshop on... This is a lot of tech people, let's be honest, you know. There's a few geeks in this group, right?
What?
Yeah, it's true. You've just got to live with that. But what we did, we brought in a bunch of experts and did a panel on how to talk and influence, right, with written and spoken word, policy and decision makers. You know, now that's the sort of skill sets that, you know, ALSs can be engaged. Just a little parallel thing on the side, but it's a good way to make it happen. Now you're all ready for listening in Spanish, I'm sure.
Thank you, Cheryl. And now Sergio.
Gracias, señor.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Olivier. Good afternoon, John and Louis. This is Sergio Salinas Porto speaking. I apologize because I was a little bit late, so maybe somebody asked this question before, but I would like to see what the ASO is doing regarding the IPv4. And I think this is an issue that is creating some delays in some of the regions and that would delay the IPv6 implementation. So I would like to see or to know whether the ASO is doing something along those lines. Thank you.
Clarity, you want to know what the ASO is doing with respect to IPv4 in general or any particular IPv4 policy?
Quizás no se comprende.
This is Sergio Salinas Porto again. We have seen that there's a sort of black market of IPv4 trading or selling, and this is a concern to me because it may delay the IPv6 implementation in some of the regions. I don't know if this is the case in my region, but in my region, we have not fully implemented IPv6, and this is my concern, and that was my question. Thank you.
Thank you. John Curran, and I'll respond to the question. Very helpful. I don't think any region of the globe has fully deployed IPv6, though we have had much success. Just earlier this month, there was World IPv6 Launch Day, and major content providers turned on IPv6 permanently for their websites, organizations like Google, Facebook, YouTube, Bing. So that's a lot of progress. But despite that progress, I think we all have to worry about making sure the focus is on deploying IPv6 and not take away from that. With respect to markets, there is actually a legitimate, recognized policy for the transfer of IPv4 address space in the ARIN region. There is one in the APNIC region as well. And this policy allows someone who needs IPv4 addresses to get them from someone who has them and doesn't need them. Now, maybe that's a university that got them many years ago and now needs to renumber. But the point is, a service provider that needs additional addresses can go and financially incent someone to give up their address space. Now, this policy is not an open market. It's a limited market. And it's a limited market because of the policy set in the region. In the ARIN region for Canada, U.S., and parts of the Caribbean, that policy says that you can transfer up to 2 years' worth of address space that you need, but no more. This is enough so that a service provider who may have neglected or overlooked the fact that we're running out of address space and suddenly finds itself needing to grow can go get additional address space for 2 years, but has no assurance that it's going to be available the next time they go to get more address space. So in this way, it's a responsible way of getting V4 addresses back into use, not sitting idle somewhere, but it doesn't provide a permanent out for IPv6. This is the policy position that the operators and service providers and end users and governments in the ARIN region have set. And in fact, there's similar policies now in some of the other regions. So while there is a transfer market for IPv4 addresses, and it may take a little bit of the demand off of IPv6, the participants know it's not a permanent solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have another question? Okay, go ahead, Sergio.
This is Sergio Salinas for the record. Louis or John, my concern is that there may be a black market or an illegal market, and that that black market enables the selling or sales of IPv4 numbers. Are the RIRs doing something in order to stop this black market? This is my specific question. Thank you.
So again, this is John, and thank you, Sergio. This is John Curran. There are a lot of people discussing the possibility of a black market. And it's not inconceivable. If you buy an entire company and you buy them simply for their address space, that's very hard to detect, because suddenly LouisNet and JohnNet are one company, and I'm growing while Louis gave up years ago, and I'm using his address space. So that is sort of possible. But it's a very limited number of circumstances, because if truly one company gets address space from another, and they're both viable running entities, the registries have to be updated in order for service providers to accept it and allow routing of it. Most service providers pay attention to the registries. When you come to Aaron, the only transfer we recognize as a legitimate transfer is one that is in compliance with policy. And we've gone to court and won. So we're quite pleased with this. We now have good recognition of these principles. So at this point, while there may be some parties trying to do it, it's so much easier to do legitimate transfers that I think that's taken a lot of the demand from illegitimate ones away. That's not perfect, but we don't think we're seeing an upsurge. Well, we're seeing an upsurge in transfers. We've had 50-some-odd IP address blocks transfer this year. I actually gave a presentation at NANOG that highlighted this. We think the surge is going to be in legitimate recognized transfers, not in illegitimate activities, because anyone investing in a transfer on the black market runs the risk that the ISP community will not recognize it.
Thank you, John, and thank you for bringing this up, Sergio. Wilfried, was your intervention directly related to this point in particular? Okay, please. Wilfried Weber.
Yeah, Wilfried Weber, and one of the three members for the European region of the Address Council. Just a clerical comment here. There is also in our region, the RIPE NCC service region, there is also a discussion going on at the moment regarding all the aspects, not just the technical transfer, but all the aspects of address transfer, either within the region or between different regions. So that's just a clerical comment. The other comment might actually be out of scope for this community, because it's going to be a little bit technical maybe, and it's related to the potential impact of IPv4 address transfer versus uptake of IPv6. We had in our community, and there's research and education environment in our little country, some of our older established, well-established universities were contacted by organizations asking well about the preparedness to engage in address transfers. And as the technical operating environment for this community, I started out together with some of my colleagues and did a little bit of investigation what this would have as technical side effects. Because the management point of view is probably, well, I've got a bunch of numbers here, someone else wants them, they are offering money, so this has to be a good deal. If you start to look at the technical implementations, it turns out, from my personal point of view and the point of view of my colleagues in the technical team, that the real issues is in implementing this transfer on the technical level and on living with the side effects and ramifications for both sides. Because what you actually end up in is some sort of pool or swamp of mutual interdependence. This is slightly different if you look at the single, what we call /24 from the 192 address space, than it is probably if a university would want to give up some pieces of their legacy class B space. And bear with me, I don't want to take you to resource origin, authentication, and digital signatures and that sort of stuff. But if you really try to find out whether it's a good idea to accept a little bit of money in return for ongoing operational complexity, then I think this is a message that we should send to the management guys, because the techies are probably in a place to understand ramifications of reverse DNS, of sort of ending up on a blacklist or block list just because someone is using a subset of your address space for stuff which is not compatible with your university's AUP. So I'm going to stop here, but I just want to plant that idea that it's not just an issue of moving money from left to right. It's an issue of actually understanding what the operational implications are. Thank you.
Thank you, Wilfried. And we'll have one last question from Yaovi, and we'll have to close after that since we've run out of time.
Yaovi speaking. Thank you. I found this very session very useful, and also people from NRO also coming here prove that it's very important that this community participate in this process. And in the Africa region, for example, there are many things, and the same in other regions, that are not technical. I think most of the regional registry, they put information on their website. So my comment is that we have to go to their website, and then we have to find some document. Even if there are some technical information, we can come back to our analysis and have a discussion, and we need to participate. Because you see people coming to this meeting the last day, they are not informed, but this organization, they are posting information on the website for many months for comment. They have a policy development process. People are not participating. So there are many things that are not technical, and then I think we need to try to go to the most of the websites and then try to participate. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Yaovi. Closing.
The last slide.
Okay, quickly, please.
Okay, quickly, last slide. So the survey for IPv6 deployment will close at the end of this month. So the link is up there. Please go ahead and check it out and answer, even if you don't plan on doing IPv6 for your organization anytime soon, because this will be repeated annually and... Okay, this will be repeated annually, and your data will be important for ongoing trending.
Thank you very much, Louis. And for any follow-ups, of course, you may use the at-large lists. Of course, we have your details so we can find you. Louis Lee, John Karin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And moving swiftly on to the next part of our agenda, the dancing chairs routine. Yes, oh, great. We have visitors that take their name card with them. That's good. And we promise we will get them right next time. Great. So we have Vantes Cartesini, Nomcom Chair, and Rob Hall, Nomcom Chair-elect. Welcome. Apologies for the small delay.
No problem.
And I hope that we have, you have a presentation, I believe.
No. It's something that I can ask you because it's the same presentation that we have done in Costa Rica. Maybe it's more interesting to talk about what's going on now in the process of ICANN.
Okay, so since
because the profile, and I would like also, it's a very good time to listen for you, you know, last inputs that you can have because we are exactly in the selection process. So we are interviewing people, we are in this time of the process. So it's we need to define till the end of this week who is going to be selected. So it's still time to get input from you about what you expected from us in the selecting people for AILA.
Okay.
So we are exactly in this point. We are interviewing people, and we have a pre-selecting some people, and we are now interviewing them. And from Friday to Monday, we need to define who is going to be selected and sent to the staff to you know, publish and so on.
Okay, Vanda, thank you.
Sorry, and my job here is a little bit different. So I'm responsible for next year's NOMCOM, and as I think I've said in this forum before, I have the privilege of being the first chair-elect, so I've been able to spend the time preparing for next year, including the budget is now finalized, and I believe it's going for approval before the ICANN board. And I'm happy to talk, if you want, at some point, about what will be different next year, because there's a few things that we've been working through with the Board Governance Committee, even at this meeting, as to what will we be doing differently as opposed to what was done in this year in the past. So this Vanda's year is kind of a stub middle year, so we did a lot different under Vanda, and then I get to even more be a little more different. So.
Okay, thank you. Well, we don't have very much.
Just a moment. Just to refresh some aspects about we talk with the board. It was regarding the process of outreach that needs to be continued, needs to be all the time task. We cannot wait for the end of the year to contact people and, think about non-com for the next year because there is short time period. So it's hard task to find out people around the world, especially because it's connected with the holidays and this kind of thing. So it's something that was raised today with the alumni and board meeting. It was, this kind of issue. This kind of issue to have outreach, all the time. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Vanda. Well, I think since we haven't got that much time, certainly it looks as though there is consensus on not having the standard presentation, especially since I think all of us were in Costa Rica. I see Alan has put his hand up, and Jean-Jacques, and Eduardo. So, Alan.
Yeah, one thing, we've had many of these meetings, and much of it is talking about what we're looking for in ALAC people. And the standard answer, we want really hard workers, people who are stupid and will put too many hours in and all those good things. What we've never had a real discussion about that I can remember is what do you want from us in the next year's NOMCOM people? We sent five people, and we've never really had a substantive discussion about what qualities you're looking for, and I think that would be useful.
So that's part of what I was coming to talk to you today, hopefully, about. So I can jump right to that if you want. So let's start with what will be different, and that certainly is one of the things that will be different. So you will be getting, as I mentioned at our last meeting together, I thought I'd be having a letter out to your chairman asking you for your selection before this meeting. It turned out that we needed to meet with the Board Governance Committee and the board to get because things will be a little bit different, and we wanted to make sure everybody was on side with the differences, and I believe they are. So you should be receiving from me within the next week, maybe two, a letter asking you to make your quick, and I do mean quick, appointments to the nomination committee for next year. The reason for the speed, if you will, is that, as Vanda pointed out, this NOMCOM really ends most of its duties and work on Sunday after it's picked. Technically, they're still in control until the AGM, but we lose those 4 to 5 months of kind of dead time, and we're planning on using that. So we've gotten permission from the General Counsel, because it gets into a bylaw issue of when is the committee actually struck, that we will start meeting in August. So the new NOMCOM will start meeting prior to the AGM with the hope to actually start looking for candidates at or near the AGM. And the other change you will likely see from us this year is the final selection meeting will be later than the ICANN meeting, likely in August of the following year. So we're trying to get to a schedule that the NOMCOMs in the future can use, and we'll try it this year and see how it works. And if it fails horribly, then I'm sure we'll go back to something different. But the thing we're trying to avoid is there's always a rush and not a lot of time between the time we get the candidates and we have to decide on the candidates, and we're trying to extend that to give more time for more due process, more interviews, more intelligence gathering about the candidates, and a longer time for recruiting. Because the thing that I think there's two phases, and this will go to your question. I don't mean to take the long way to get there, but there's two key areas to what the NOMCOM does. The second is very well known. We pick, and we pick from the best candidates we have, and I think the NOMCOM has been very effective at doing that, certainly the three I've sat on. You know, last year, as I like to say, we are the most diverse group of any across ICANN, so we have the most individual representatives from the widest swath of the community. And last year, it was unanimous between everybody on the committee who our slate and who our picks were. So I think that's a testament to how well the committee does come together and work together to say, yes, we can put aside any differences and any political aspirations or policies or politics we have and say, we're going to do what's best for ICANN, and I've seen that in every year. So it's very good at that. What I think the committee is not so great at is recruiting. So we can only pick from the slate that we have, and I think the committee needs to turn its attention more to how do we get those candidates. So to answer your question, one of the things you'll see in my letter to you is a description of exactly what type of candidate we're looking for to the nominating committee, as well as what type of candidate we're looking for the board and other positions. And I think what you'll see is we will be mirroring for the first time, the nominating committee. I have the advantage of having, before I ask, the advice from the board of what they're looking for and what skill set they're looking for. So they've said very publicly to us in a written letter, they're looking for governance, board governance type of expertise. The independent group they hired reaffirmed this, and their presentation was yesterday. So what I'm going to be imploring you, and again, I'll be very clear, it's up to you who you send. But what I will be asking for is please send people that have a similar skill set to those we're looking for. Because of the two steps, one, people that have board governance and a lot of experience in board governance are more likely to be able to help recruit those that do, and they certainly are more likely to be able to tell who's a good one and who's a bad one if they know exactly what it is. Right. So I would implore you to try and send people who have the similar skill set to what you think would be a great director. Okay? Is that the easiest way to put it? So you don't have to. It's your decision. But that's what I'll be asking for is I'll be describing these are the two jobs. I believe someone that could fulfill the position is the best to evaluate others that you're going to put into that position. And I hope that makes some sense. The other key point I think that should be noted is it is entirely possible that the nomination committee will not meet at the same time as ICANN meetings next year. So we are not looking for people that regularly attend ICANN meetings. They can or can't. What I'm saying is there's no advantage or disadvantage. If you pick people that have never been to an ICANN meeting, that's fine. They may not end up coming to an ICANN meeting. There is some precedence for this in the past. If you look forward on the calendar, one of the reasons, of course, is our next meeting, our next decision-making meeting would be in Africa, and in the previous African one where it fell in the rotation, they held it in Toronto because of a visa problem for the candidates. Because we try and fly the candidates in to interview them, so we want somewhere central, somewhere that you know everybody can get to easily, cheaply. It's always a budget matter with ICANN. I think we're also trying to extend the deadlines out past where these meetings fall to give the committee more time. So I think what you'll see is we start earlier, we end a little later. We'll still seat the candidates at the AGM the following year, of course, but do not assume that this is a way, do not assume that they will be coincide with ICANN meetings. I think they may. Toronto's a pretty central location, but we're just in the planning stages for that now, which is why I will be asking for the urgency of please, I understand your bylaws and rules and that type of thing. Pardon me? Can I slow down?
No, well, A, slow down, but B, can you be specific on your definition of short?
I think I'll be, and I apologize because I realize that the next week is the first week of July. I think I'll be asking for a 30 to 45-day turnaround if that fits with your bylaws. I know some constituencies may not be able to do that and will adjust, but I'm going to ask you to do it post-haste because we'd like to start meeting end of August, early September with our first NOMCOM meeting because those of you that have been on the NOMCOM may know the first few NOMCOM meetings really are about process and procedure and how, you know, educating the new people. This is what we do. This is how we do it. A lot of paperwork of administrivia like signing the confidentiality forms and that type of thing. No candidate will become visible to the NOMCOM until after the AGM when they're officially seated. So there will be no candidate information passed forward from previous years, no candidate information visible until they're officially seated at the AGM by the bylaws.
Thank you, Rob, for extension. We have a lot of questions, and we have very little time. We've already got two people in the queue. We've got Jean-Jacques and Eduardo and Darlene as well. So that makes three, actually. We have, 25 minutes until the end of this. We've actually got 5 minutes until the end of this specific session, so it's a bit hard. Just one question, though, that I have specifically on the process. I thought that one NOMCOM has to be disbanded for the next NOMCOM to start, and usually it's upon appointment that the next NOMCOM starts.
That's sort of half true and sort of not half true. So it's not an appointment. So you've always appointed before so that you knew who the person going in was at the AGM. It is in the bylaws that the new NOMCOM will not officially be sat until after the AGM. And Vanda's NOMCOM is still responsible until that AGM. So last year we had a GNSO issue that came up, as you remember, 2 days before the NOMCOM ended. Vanda's NOMCOM still exists, still is responsible. The new NOMCOM is preparing to get ready, if you will, and doing all the administrivia. So there's no overlap of official NOMCOMs. But because the budget years start in June, we're all in the same budget year, so we're working on adjusting it. But that's why it took so long with the General Counsel's office to make sure we're not breaking any rules. But we're all trying to be efficient and get more work done. So,
yeah, the problem
okay.
is to select the people.
Yeah.
Jean-Jacques, Eduardo, and then I'll take one more question after that. So Tijani, and then we'll move on.
Not me.
Go ahead, Jean-Jacques.
Hi, Vanda. Hi, Rob. I just want to bring up one point. It's the skill set. My remark is this. Through my experience being on the board and now on the ALAC and looking around, I find that it's probably quite useful when you are trying to populate committees, ACs and SOs. You may, at a certain point, require this profile more than that. But my question is about the board. To what extent do you feel yourself bound by what the chair of the board or the chair of the BGC tells you about, we need this skill set? I say this because in the past, on several occasions, we've had cases of people who had absolutely astounding qualifications on their CV. They were the best lawyers in their part of the world. And then when they step down from the board, they do something which is unethical. So what's more important? Is it the personal value, or is it the skill set of having had 10 years' experience as a chartered accountant, for instance? What I'm saying is that character, reliability, personality, and the ability to work with others is way more important than any specific skill set.
We are taking into consideration all the recommendations for all communities, ACs and SOs, including the board, but we are not bound by these exigences. We can tell them, and we are independent. And the way we're gonna select is regarding the qualities of the people. And sometimes the way they present themselves to us, it's quite important. The way they can convince us, they can, really work in team, work in the board. It's sometimes quite important for that. We try to fulfill lacunes of capacity in the board, of course, but it's depend of the group of people that we have to select. Maybe they are looking for someone that is can speak 10 language, but we cannot have these people inside. So for us, more important is to make sure that we pay attention and all the requirements we heard from all communities, not only the board. The board is just one community more. And there is a lot of things that is not the same sometimes even conflict with the board requirements and other constituents are required to have into the board. So it's our idea is to make sure, as ATRT demands, that we fulfill, you know, the best we could, the general agreement among all those requirements. That is our demand from ATRT.
Thank you. And so I will require short answers as well.
Yeah, I'm going to answer a little differently because you used the word bound, and I want to be very clear. We're an independent committee. We are not bound by anything any group tells us to do. We're bound by the bylaws. But there is one thing in the bylaws that comes back to your question, which is we must report back to the board on how every individual candidate we selected to the board meets or doesn't meet their advice. And so I don't think anyone feels bound to meet their advice. Certainly the only advice we have from the board is in the area of that official letter that says they'd like people with board governance experience on a mid-size or larger board. The trait you mentioned of an accountant or that is not advice to us from the board. Those get into the individual skill sets of members, and I don't think they're looked at nearly as much. I also think that the ethics and the ability of someone to communicate well and who the personality and the person is far more important, because there's no way I would ever put someone that didn't have that, that may have been the perfect board governor, on the board personally. Now, that said, Vanda and I are in a very different position on this committee. We don't influence or select. We're the chair, or she's the chair, I will be the chair. Our goal is to help those that do select through the process. And as you can imagine, there are wildly divergent views among members, as there should be on a board, there certainly is in the NOMCOM, about what traits are important or not. Our job is to help them all try to come together and coalesce. So I hope that gives you the answer you were seeking. Thank you.
Thank you. We still have three people in the queue. We have Eduardo, Darlene, whom I didn't list because I forgot in my list, and Tejani. First is Eduardo. Please, can we have quick questions and quick answers as well? Thank you.
Quick question. This is Eduardo Diaz. Can you tell us what was the final number of applications that you received this year?
72.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Darlene?
Darlene Thompson. I guess I'm just a little concerned with you. You're saying you're not going to be meeting during ICANN meetings, and I can understand that. But I'm also very concerned about people that are selected through the nominating committee. I've seen some spectacular people hired, selected through the nominating committee, some of them sitting in this very room, Alan, Vanda, Jacqueline. But I've also seen some spectacular failures of people that have been hired. And before they're hired, you never heard of them. While they were there, never heard them. Gone. And still never heard them. And so it's like, I think there needs to be some familiarity with the ICANN process for both those on the nominating committee, which you guys both have, but who knows who's going to come after you, and those that are being nominated into those positions, because 2 years isn't long enough. I mean, it took me 4 years to wrap my mind around what's happening here, you know, and I'm just starting to become effective now. And I've been going at this for 5-6 years. So 2 years is not enough to bring someone that's a complete outsider that knows nothing about it up to speed. So that's just a couple of my concerns. Thank you.
So let me answer, let me correct your first statement, because I don't think I said exactly what you said. I did not say they will not be at the ICANN meetings. I said there is a possibility they will not be coinciding completely. So this year they did coincide, all three. I'm trying to give you the impression that there is a possibility they will not. So if people are assuming they will, I do not want them to get there and find out they're not. So I'm just trying to give that information out. Okay, as I said, Toronto's pretty convenient. We may end up there together. But do not assume that they will coincide with ICANN meetings.
Shouldn't have any visa problems.
Right. So hopefully not. Well, I won't. I'm Canadian. to your other point, the job of the NOMCOM is not to decide the issues within ICANN. the job of the NOMCOM is not to understand all the issues that are before the GNSO or the board. The job of who you're putting on the NOMCOM is to pick amazingly brilliant people that can do that. And so I do not believe that it is necessarily, and this is my personal opinion, I do not believe it is necessarily that a person needs to understand the inner workings of ICANN and all the policy decisions and all the ramifications of what's going on in ICANN in order to pick great people and great minds. And in fact, I think if I look at it in a binary format, if I said you can have someone with lots of ICANN experience and you can have someone with no ICANN experience and lots of board governance experience, I think both of those would be great. I think either of those would be great. I think neither of those would be a problem. So please do not send someone to the NOMCOM that has no board governance experience and no ICANN experience. I think that would be a mistake. Again, it's up to you to choose. These are my opinions. If you can send someone that has great board governance experience and no ICANN, that's okay. And someone that, if you find someone that has both, that's great too. But please, keep in mind their job is not to solve any policy issues at ICANN. Their job is to find great people and then decide on them. And I emphasize the find, because that's what we've been missing. And I think your group has the widest reach of any we talk to, and I think your group probably has the most access to directors of mid to large corporations with that board governance experience that we're so desperate for. So we're going to be coming at you to say, please send people that can find these people for us and then help us decide on them, and that would be a perfect solution for us.
But that's where I'm saying that they need some ICANN knowledge. They may not have to know every nitty-gritty detail, but if they don't, then they won't be selecting the right people. Because if you do hire on someone that's incredibly talented, and he's an accountant, but he knows nothing about ICANN, it's going to be a problem.
Again, we're coming back to individual key skills like accountancy. That's not what we evaluate. We're not looking to put another accountant on because Ramirez, who has some audit experiences coming off. That's not our job. We're looking for good people with sound decision skills, good personality, ethics, and board governance experience. That's what we've been told. So it will change over time. Every NOMCOM will have different mandates because our job is to keep the balance on the board of differences, not to make the board all the same. And right now what the board needs and next year is senior board governance experience. That's what they feel they're lacking. That's what they've asked for. Next year or the year after might be something completely different. They might say we need audit legal. I mean, I doubt they'd ever get that specific, I didn't mean to get into a long answer, so I hope I've been clear.
There is still a concern, and I'm glad that Darlene brought this up, though, that the delegates that we have on the NOMCOM might not have as much access to us to be able to discuss what is required today on the NOMCOM than if they were actually seeing us, since there would be an ICANN meeting. And I think Darlene was alluding to this as well.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. Remember, we ask for your input in writing. So we ask your group to tell us what do you want in a director and what do you want in an ALEC in writing. We've received that from very few groups, unfortunately. But we will be coming back. I mean, I love coming and talking to the groups. Interestingly enough, you're the only group this meeting to invite Vanda and I to talk to you, so thank you for that. And I'm happy to do it every single meeting, and I'm happy to talk for an hour on it because I think this is vitally important. That's why I volunteer to do this. And you're paying attention to it. You're involved in it. You've got 5 seats in the NOMCOM. I love that you're so involved, and I'm going to try and help any way I can to get you to that level that you can be even more effective, I think. So.
Thank you. We have Tejani. Alan, was that related to this specific point?
One sentence related to what was being said.
One sentence. One sentence to Alan, since it's related to this conversation, and then Tejani, you can have the final words.
Rob, you've said a dozen times today that you want us to send you people who can recognize good board governance people. Please, when you're selecting your ALAC members, Vanda, don't give us good board governance people. We don't need governors here. We need workers. We need people who can do different things. So please.
I agree. Sorry, we've heard your advice. The advice I'm referring to is the official board advice for the board. we never forget that we're also appointing ALEC GNSO. We have a written advice from the GNSO, from the CCNSO. We've met with all of them. The committee will follow their advice when appointing to their positions. Of course, we all tend to always think of the board position first, which is what I've been referring to here.
Thank you. Tijani. Coming back to the NOMCOM meeting outside, out of the ICANN meetings, I don't see any advantage in this solution because, first, when they come at the same time of the those meetings, they will be able to participate in these meetings. First advantage. Second advantage is they can interact with us. The issue of visa, it's the same for every member of any constituency in ICANN and for any meeting. So I don't think it's a specific point for NOMCOM. That's the first point. The second point.
Sorry, can I just address that one? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you the idea it's just about visas. And I'll give you a very specific and concrete example. We just started today 3 days of interviewing. We then go into 3 days of debating as to who the client should be. And we met yesterday to get all this process started as a NOMCOM for an hour. You would probably be amazed at the number of people that have other polling commitments here today because it's constituency day. To be quite blunt about it, we didn't have one ALEC member in our meeting yesterday because it happened to coincide with your 10th anniversary. We understand that, but everybody is so damn busy at ICANN meetings, and frankly, our attention should be to NOMCOM first and foremost during the selection process. And so what I think I'm personally finding is there's a pull on people, and so we have to find a way, certainly for the final selection meeting, to move it off. And I hope I don't offend anyone. It's just simply a timing and concentration issue because this is vitally important. So.
Second point, Olivier. Second point is the feedback between the NOMCOM chair and the ALEC chair. I think that we send you five people. We don't know what is their performance there. We are not asking anyone to judge anyone, but we need some feedback, and the feedback have to be done confidentially to the chair, who will chair it with the EXCOM and with the RALU, the concerned RALU. That will avoid us to appoint him again another time.
Tijani, trust me, it's Olivia here. The chair gets the feedback.
Thank you very much.
I'm a little shy of that. So you're in a different, unique situation as the ALEC in that you have five members. Yeah. I would suggest you sit down with them. You know, you're the only constituency with more than one except the business constituency. So you're in the unique position of being able to sit down with them all individually and say, what do you think with each other? I don't know if it's the chair's position to rate or comment on how effective a member of the NOMCOM was or not. I think that, frankly, I would resist that, to be quite honest. I'm not sure that's what the chair's position is to criticize or critique, if you will, the decisions of the ALEC. I understand how frustrating that must be, because, but I think you can get the same information a different way without making, you know, Vanda or I come back and critique people and say were they effective or not. I don't think that's
Yeah,
wrong.
We cannot critique people. We just send the message that we need people that have some experience in board governance. So send those kind of people, because all the others give us a lot of
We hear you, Vanda, and I just want to correct for the record, of course, we are not a constituency. We're the equivalent of we are an AC.
Sorry,
if you want to compare constituencies, then your BC is something like one of our ALSs. Your non-commercial stakeholder group is like one of our RALOs, and you're talking to the GNSO Council now.
I certainly didn't mean to offend.
No, it's not offensive.
I've been doing this. This is my 40th meeting, and I am so confused as to the terminology over the years.
I understand,
so,
and you do need cliff notes, but it's a big difference.
It is. You're right. Absolutely right.
I'll have to close this now. Thank you. Meaning getting feedback, I was getting feedback from not only the chair, but getting feedback from everyone, actually. And I do know many of the people who are on the NOMCOM. So not only our own at-large people that are on the NUMCOM, but also the others, and finding, well, who skived off, who said nothing, who was pretty good, and who did a lot of outreach, because ultimately the last thing we want to do is to send dead wood to the NUMCOM. And I have to find every single way as the chair to find out if we've sent dead wood or if we've actually sent some people that
I
have made a difference.
I think that's the appropriate mechanism, not something official from the chair. So.
Yeah. And another thing, I'm not mean that there is only in this board people that can be sent to the NUMCOM. There is a lot of people with board governance experience in the ALS, whatever. But anyway.
Vandis Cartesini, Rob Hall, thanks.
We have to close
this one.
Can I just leave you with one thought, though?
Yeah, sure.
I understand there's been some concerns about conflict, and I actually thought I'd be talking a lot about that today. I'm happy to talk about it privately, one-on-one, or in a group. I'm open, I'm blunt, I'm straightforward. I've been doing this. This is my 40th meeting. I think people know me. So if there are concerns, bring them up in a forum like this. I'm happy to come back. I'm here all week. But I'd rather address them and talk about them and understand them. As opposed to not. So I'm a little shocked that that wasn't a topic, but I'd rather deal with it head on.
Okay, Rob. I think, well, we touched on this in Costa Rica, but the concern, I think, was more with the optics rather than the person.
Okay.
So it would be unfair to ask you questions about it or to confront you with it, because I don't think there's a confrontation.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a case of what does it look like, and that's something which is out there. I don't think it's something that could be constructive if we discussed it.
Okay.
But thanks for bringing this up.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And see you soon again.
Congratulations.